The stock market keeps whistling its merry tune. I'm David Brancaccio in New York, driven by unnamed sources in places like the Wall Street Journal hinting at progress in U.S.-China trade talks and prodded along by lower interest rates. The Dow Jones Industrial Average hit a record high yesterday, the first one since July, on an increase of 0.4%. The Dow future this morning is up 84 points, 0.3%, suggesting perhaps a new record today. We'll see. But Europe's economy has been faltering, and growth isn't what it used to be in China. This morning, I asked Michael Hewson, chief market analyst on the trading floor at CMC Markets in London, about the disconnect.
I don't think the stock market has ever really been truly representative of the underlying economy. I think it's more representative of central bank policy. Certainly, if you look at the economic conditions here in the Europe, they're a lot more difficult, for example, than they are in the US. And we've also seen the Chinese central bank ease its one-year policy rate for the first time since 2016. So they're making monetary conditions a little bit looser in the Asia region as well. And obviously, when that happens, investors generally tend to migrate into stocks and shares simply because there's a much better opportunity to get a return.
The Dow is up 17% the year so far. S&P 500 up nearly 23%. The NASDAQ Composite up 27% this year. Apple, it does phones, watches, TV streaming, and now affordable housing. Yesterday, it made a $2.5 billion pledge as it joins with other big tech companies looking for ways to ease the enormous cost of finding a place to live in California, one byproduct of tech's success. Experts are welcoming the money and the sentiment, but cautioning that it's not going to fix the national problem. Marketplace's Jack Stewart has been speaking to some of them.
Apple's money joins $1 billion each from Facebook and Alphabet, Google's parent company. Sunia Zaitman from the Council of Large Public Housing Authorities says these amounts are a crucial recognition of the importance of housing to both communities and corporations. But even more is needed.
My candid assessment would be a day late and a dollar short. In terms of order of magnitude, I would say it's an important starting point.
She says public housing in the U.S. needs an injection of between $50 and $70 billion. And there's a national shortage of 7 million homes for very low-income renters, says Andrew Aron from the National Low-Income Housing Coalition.
It's great to see companies like Apple making investments like this because it's so desperately needed. In the end, what we need, though, are federal resources.
He says not every part of the country has rich companies that can make investments in local housing. I'm Jack Stewart for Marketplace.
Thirty years ago, this coming Saturday, gathered masses breached the Berlin Wall. This watershed political moment also became an extraordinarily expensive moment for Germany. It opted to spend more than $2 trillion over 30 years to unite the dynamic West with lagging East. Yesterday, we reported on why the Germans spent the money, but what did the massive cash injection buy? From Berlin, Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
Welcome to Oberschöneweide, the historical industrial site of Berlin.
Susanna Reumschüssel runs a museum in a disused factory in what was the center of East German electronic engineering and the heart of the local community.
The big factories, they supplied everything. Your working place, but also the social life for the kindergarten or for the supermarkets. And you got all your friends in there and you spent your life in there.
But that life of community singing and social solidarity came to a grinding halt after the wall came down. 77-year-old Jochen Senter was working here at that time, making electric cables. There were 7,000 employees then. When the factory closed a few years later, there were only 58.
Every year we lost more workers, and all the time you were afraid that you'd be the next to lose their job.
Half of East German workers lost their jobs after reunification. The one-for-one currency conversion was the killer blow, says Rolf Langhammer of the Kiel Institute.
That conversion rate priced labour out of the market.
East German companies suddenly had to pay the same nominal wages in a currency worth much, much more than the old Ostmark.
The economists were rather unhappy with that situation because we said that the shock is too hard.
Cushioning that shock has cost a fortune. More than half the $2 trillion pumped into the East was for the social safety net.
Nächste Station, Karlshorst.
But billions have been spent on railways and other infrastructure. And Mats Muller of Corman Software says a $1.5 million government grant persuaded his small company to set up in rural East Germany.
If there haven't been this investment, tech companies like ours wouldn't even think about setting up in a region like this.
But costs in East Germany are low, he says.
Now we have way more possibilities.
Berlin's street musicians prepare for a flood of tourists this week. The government is celebrating. It admits Eastern Germany still lags, and some of that $2 trillion may have been wasted. But the overall verdict, says Minister for East Germany Christian Hirter, must be positive.
I think it was an amazing success story. Yes, for German reunification, it was a bargain.
But he concedes the 2 million people who left the East have not returned, a brain drain that has sapped the vitality of the region. In Berlin, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
So by one calculation, it was $2.2 trillion Germany spent, $30,000 per person over 3 decades. What if the U.S. allocated that kind of money to unify lagging and booming parts of the U.S.? Infrastructure, education, retraining, rethinking manufacturing. There's an analysis showing county by county which regions of the U.S. are set up to succeed with changes in technology and those set to be left behind. We'll talk about the reunification of America tomorrow here. All our coverage is accumulating online, marketplace.org. Our producers are Rose Conlon, Victoria Craig, Meredith Gerritsen, Candice Manriquez-Wren, and Daniel Shin. I'm David Brancaccio, Marketplace Morning Report, from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.